Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Right now on Last Call, Amazon smashing earnings. Shares are up after a big beat. Plus, while everybody else is talking NVIDIA, we're going to bring you some sneaky hot stocks that you may not see anywhere else. No fakes. Congress getting serious about targeting deep fakes. The senator behind the push is here. Can't live with it. Apparently can't live without it. Why live sports could be the knockout punch for TV as you know it. On a natural high, the Biden administration making moves to make it easier to buy and sell weed, and a number of stocks are moving. Call it wage against the machines. Well, Dave & Buster's latest gamble pay off. We'll tell you what they're doing, all that and more over the hour. It's belly up or buckle up. Last Call is up right now. All right. Hi, everybody. Hope you had a good Tuesday. I'm Brian Sullivan. All that is coming up. But first up, are we finally getting to the point where inflation is beginning to break the American consumer? Here's why we say that. And let's start with McDonald's. Mickey D's saying it is rising prices, and those prices are starting to push customers away. Here is the CEO today.
Consumers continue to be even more discriminating with every dollar that they spend as they face elevated prices in their day-to-day spending, which is putting pressure on the QSR industry.
QSR meaning quick service restaurants, aka fast food. And check this out, and we aren't clowning around here. Even sit-down restaurant chain Chili's has a new TV ad out poking fun at how expensive fast food has gotten.
The three for me only at Chili's is now available with the all-new Big Smasher Burger, piled up high with nearly half a pound of beef. Or you could settle for just some other burger at a drive-thru.
Let's be clear. This is not just about McDonald's. All the fast food companies have jacked up their prices. There's a lot of reasons. Forced minimum wage hikes in California can't be helping either. It's all kind of enough maybe to make a McDonald's owner grimace. And it's not just fast food. Starbucks shares getting ground down right now. They posted a shocking sales drop, the first sales drop since the pandemic. Starbucks stock right now is down 12%. Doesn't help that coffee commodity prices are soaring again. Here is the Starbucks CEO on their call.
In a number of key markets, we continue to feel the impact of a more cautious consumer, particularly with our more occasional customer.
Now, you got to eat, but you also need a place to live. And housing costs also continue to defy gravity and higher borrowing costs. Today, we learned that home prices jumped more than 6% in February from the same month last year. And that, my friends, the quickest rate of home price jumps in about 18 months. And as you know, all what we just talked about is layered on top of higher car insurance, higher home insurance, higher cost of repairs, and more. All going to the moon in prices. Now, all of this worried stock investors today. The markets fell across the board. Everybody saying good riddance to April. The Dow closing out its worst month in more than a year and a half. The Nasdaq down 2%. And the S&P 500 had its worst month since September. Now, all of these data points coming as the Federal Reserve is set to make an interest rate call tomorrow. So, will all this newly rising inflation data force the Fed to keep rates high or even raise rates again? For more on what this means for the markets, the Fed, and your money, let's bring in our leadoff panel tonight. Joining us is the CEO and CIO of Laffer Tangler Investments, Nancy Tangler, and chief economist at EY Parthenon, Greg Dacko. Greg, start with you. Any chance the Federal Reserve pivots to being hawkish and indicates that they may not not only cut rates, Maybe they have to raise rates? Is that even a chance?
I don't think Fed Chair Powell will want to signal that there is any imminent rate hikes on the horizon. But I think we will be very attentive to what he says in terms of how long the Fed is likely to hold rates at their current level. We are in a bit of a holding pattern, an uncomfortable zone, as we approach an inflation plateau. You were talking about this element of cost fatigue. It's very clear that consumers, especially consumers at the lower end of the income spectrum, are increasingly constrained by elevated costs, and that is reducing their purchasing power and their willingness to spend. So the Fed has to be very careful in how it calibrates policy, because we are seeing the signs of a bit of a slowdown, which will in turn lead to more disinflation. So I'm more optimistic on the disinflation side, but Fed policymakers have to be a little bit more cautious and will likely err on the side of maintaining monetary policy as restrictive as it's been.
Yeah, Nancy, I just talked about the stock market, worst month for the Dow in a year and a half, but also treasuries. Overall, U.S. government bonds had their worst performance in 7 months. It feels like the bond market, maybe not Jay Powell, but the bond market is making a pivot.
Yeah, Brian, thanks so much for having me. I think one of the things that we have to remember is that this Fed chairman has been wrong at almost every turning point. Add to that, they've got 400 plus PhD economists that are, you know, plugging in 500 inputs into a model with 170 equations, and we still can't get accurate information on the economy. So we listen to the companies, and what we're hearing from the companies starting 2 weeks ago is that things are slowing. We saw guidance come down for some of the industrials, or just merely affirmed instead of raised. And the only space that seems to be doing well is the unloved technology space. And so I think it's important for investors to pay attention to this slowdown and to the fact that the labor market might be softening. And we think there's a number of indications.
Uh-oh. I think, Nancy, you talked about labor softening. You talk about rising prices. And our friends at Bespoke pointed this out, that Google search trends for the word stagflation are at the highest in about a year and a half to 2 years, but they are rising. Stagflation, it's an ugly thing. It's an ugly word. Are you worried about stagflation?
Well, I do agree with Greg. I mean, I think China's exporting not only disinflation, but deflation. And we saw it in the GDP numbers. Trade accounted for a good portion of the miss in GDP, because remember, it's subtracted. The dollar is very strong, which is also going to encourage more imports from other parts of the world. So I'm not sure we're there yet. I remember it well, because I was alive and kicking when we had the last bout of stagflation. But I think you have to be aware of the fact that the Fed has a dual mandate, and the dual mandate requires that they need to pay attention to labor. We have 284,000 fewer full-time jobs than we had a year ago. Part-time jobs are up. Average hourly, average work week is down. Wages have rolled over despite the ECI. So I think there's some headwinds, shall we say.
Yeah. I posted it on Twitter and LinkedIn yesterday, Greg, that effectively Deutsche Bank came out and said that most, if not all, job growth the last couple of years has been due to largely undocumented immigration. Take that away from what you want. If the job market underlying it is actually not as strong as the data indicates, and I'd like you to comment on as well what you think about it, what is the Fed to do? Because I don't think the Fed can do anything about rising home insurance costs.
No, they certainly can't. But I would push back against this notion that we're in a stagflation environment. We still have GDP growth that's trending around 3% on a year-over-year basis, and inflation that has come down below 3%, 2.7, 2.8, when you look at the Fed's key inflation gauges. That's not stagflation. Stagflation is inflation in the 6 to 7% and no growth. So we're not there. But we are seeing signs of an ongoing labor market rebalancing with some softening in labor demand that will put downward pressure on wage growth as we move forward. And as Nancy was correctly highlighting, we are in an environment where consumers are exercising more discretion with how much they buy. Increased price sensitivity, reduced options for markups are disinflationary. I think that offers the option for the Fed to have a more forward-looking perspective and gradually ease monetary policy still this year.
Yeah, very quickly, Greg. And I want to be clear, you are right. I'm not saying we are in stagflation. I was talking about, are we headed toward it? is it a possibility? Only because people, according to Bespoke, have been more and more searching for it. They're probably curious about the word. Very quickly, what then do you expect from the Federal Reserve tomorrow?
I think Fed Chair Powell will have a very delicate balancing act tomorrow. He's likely to essentially signal that the Fed does not yet have the full confidence to start easing monetary policy. That's not going to be a big surprise. There will be little change to the policy statement. There will likely be an announcement of a tapering of the quantitative tightening process. But I think he will try to stay as far as possible from signaling any further hawkishness, because that's not necessary at this stage with what markets are pricing.
Should be an interesting Fed tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, right here, by the way, on CNBC. Greg Dacko, Nancy Tangler, thank you both very much. Great conversation.
Thank you.
All right, so we gave you the macro markets. They were pretty ugly. Let's take a look at inside the markets, because there's always some good news. Your big winner of the day was Leidos Holdings. It's a defense stock, rose 6.5%. The big decliner has been a hot stock, at least until today. GE Healthcare tanking 14% and nearly wiping out all the gains of the last 3 months. All right, got to get a quick check on futures again. Thinly traded, but given what happened today, got to take a look. And futures indicated down, NASDAQ futures down about 0.4%. All right, we are just getting rolling. And up next, a big move reportedly ready to come for the White House, sending pot stocks into the green, what it is and what it means. Plus, some more good news. Amazon up right now, and you may not believe which part of Amazon's business is growing the fastest. We'll tell you, though. Stick around.
Swing into summer and save when you go pro. Invest with an advantage. Be prepared for any market with CNBC Pro's exclusive stock screener, Investor Playbook, and Stock Picks. With CNBC Pro, you'll have the strategy and tools you need to reach your goals. Get Pro's unrivaled access and essential tools with a special offer for a limited time. Go to cnbc.com/prosale now.
All right, let's get now to tomorrow's news tonight. And first up, a new stock is set to join the New York Stock Exchange tomorrow. It's called Vikings Holding. It is a cruise line. Yes, that Viking. Based out of Bermuda. And a source tells CNBC the company is set to price its IPO at $24 a share. We will, of course, be covering the first trade for the cruise line tomorrow. Meantime, AMD getting hammered right now. Investors not liking the news that the chip maker gave a rather lukewarm sales forecast. And it's not just about AI here. AMD says it is seeing weak demand for chips used in video gaming gear. Data center business did great, up 80% from last year. And maybe some good news for marijuana advocates. The AP reporting that the Biden administration is going to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug. Right now, weed is grouped along other drugs like heroin, LSD, and ecstasy. It's actually classified as more dangerous than cocaine, meth, and fentanyl. Fentanyl can kill an adult with a tiny piece. The reported change would allow research into potential medical benefits of marijuana, making it easier for companies also to buy and sell weed. As you might imagine, the big cannabis stocks like Curaleaf, Green Thumb, Tilray, Aurora, Canopy Growth, they're all soaring on the news. They're up 24, 22, 39, 46, and 78%. Wow. But let's talk about this potential move and bring in physician and NBC News contributor Dr. Kavita Patel. Dr. Patel, the stock market obviously likes it, okay? But as a practicing physician, do you?
Yeah, Brian, so it's a little bit of a mixed message in the sense that it's not full legalization. I think a lot of people heard the headlines and thought that means that marijuana is legal and it kind of takes away some of the stigma that's been associated with it. It's still a controlled substance. And I think as a doctor, I think that's exactly where it needs to remain. And then I would say that what worries me is that we are seeing patients that are abusing marijuana and some in their young teens that kind of have seen this change in state law and perhaps this change in federal law as a sign that it's okay to consume marijuana outside of kind of a prescription or a guided setting. And Brian, that's not good news. So I do hope that what we see is this shift to scheduled controlled substance, more research, and more clarity on is there such a thing as too much marijuana? And we are definitely seeing that in ERs and clinics around the country.
I mean, have you walked the streets of New York lately, Dr. Pinter?
Yes, I have.
You leave a restaurant and you've got a contact high within three blocks because I feel like I'm the only one not smoking weed on the streets of New York at this point. But your point is well taken. I think this is a critical issue. Listen, marijuana, like alcohol, right? You can enjoy it responsibly or you can abuse it. You have a martini once in a while. It's very different than drinking a bottle of vodka every day. So talk to us more about the risk, or at least what we think is the risk, of extended and heavy marijuana use. It is not, to your point, a completely harmless substance.
Right. And that's why it should be treated as it's being proposed, a controlled substance. I think it's a big, important shift. And it'll allow us to do the kind of research to understand, Brian, just like we do with controlled substances like codeine, to understand the effects on people. We see effects in the entire body. So I have seen central nervous system effects. I have seen young people, old people, all ages, black out, have no recollection, kind of memory lapses. We're also seeing effects on the lungs because depending on how you take in the marijuana, ingest the marijuana, it can have kind of the same effect that smoking can. Different chemical substance, but it can have over time some of the similar effects. And then because we haven't been able to do federal research, Brian, we have a lot of open questions. Does it interact with other medications? Could this actually improve some medications? We've heard about appropriate medicinal use of marijuana, glaucoma, cancer, inflammation. But we need to have more information on this.
Doctor, it shouldn't be labeled. It shouldn't, but to your point, I think, and I'm sorry to jump in, it also shouldn't be classified as the same as fentanyl. I mean, fentanyl,
A
microscopic dose could kill me, a 200-pound man.
Absolutely. You're 100% right to point out that having it as a Schedule I substance on par with LSD, anything that has no medicinal use whatsoever, is a misnomer, and it's not keeping up to date. So I think what you're seeing the DEA do is basically say, we are getting more science. We need more. We want to watch and monitor the prescribing behavior for this controlled substance. And then this too could shift, Brian. I mean, 10 years from now, we might have enough information to understand. I think what it leaves though in a quandary are all these state laws that kind of let, like you said, depending on where you live, you walk out and you can get lots of substances that are not necessarily for medicinal use. And when that gets into the wrong hands and the wrong quantities, that's when we worry. And we're starting to see this at all ages.
By the way, it's a beautiful night tonight. I'll drive home with the window open. And the scary thing is, Dr. Patel, I can smell it on the New Jersey Turnpike. And it's usually the car going 42 in the far right hand lane when everybody else is going 85.
Right.
Dr. Patel, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So, folks, those stocks are absolutely soaring. All right. Still ahead. Amazon betting big on AI, but is that really why the stock is up right now? Kate Rooney up to tell you what you may have missed in her earnings call.
Swing into summer and save when you go pro. Invest with an advantage. Be prepared for any market with CNBC Pro's exclusive stock screener, Investor Playbook, and Stock Picks. With CNBC Pro, you'll have the strategy and tools you need to reach your goals. Get Pro's unrivaled access and essential tools with a special offer for a limited time. Go to cnbc.com/prosale now.
All right, Amazon earnings, they're out after the bell tonight, and there's two themes. Folks, you're smart. You can guess one of those themes, right? I mean, AI, okay? I revealed it. But ad revenue was also a big deal. Advertising revenue for Amazon. Don't forget, even if you don't Amazon stock directly own it, Amazon is in the top 15 of 339 ETFs, according to Vettify. So you probably own Amazon if you just own any broad tech ETF. The stock is up about 1% right now, but it's been on a great run. Let's get more on the quarter, bring in Kate Rooney, who we're glad she's in our corner. She was just tuned into the earnings. See how I did that? I screwed up, but then I made it sound like I sort of meant to screw up. Kate Rooney.
You're a pro, Sully. I'm always in your corner. All right, but let's start talking about Amazon. Operating profit tripled at Amazon for the quarter. It was driven in large part by cost cutting, and one of those A's, Amazon Web Services, its all-important cloud business sales there grew 17%, putting to rest some of the fear about a slowdown or Amazon losing market share to some of the other cloud players out there, like Microsoft, and Google. That growth was thanks to demand from enterprises and generative AI. Executives say Gen AI is now a multi-billion dollar business measured by its annualized run rate. Overall, AWS, for its part, hit $100 billion in ARR. CEO Andy Jassy saying there is considerable momentum on the AI front. He said that on the earnings call, but that growth can be expensive. Here's what Jassy said about that spending.
We expect the combination of AWS's re-accelerating growth and high demand for Gen AI to meaningfully increase year-over-year capital expenditures in 2024, which, given the way the AWS business model works, is a positive sign of the future growth. The more demand AWS has, the more we have to procure new data centers, power, and hardware.
The $14 billion Amazon has spent so far this year will be the, quote, low point, but executives are assuring analysts, and they said this on the call, that they're seeing strong demand signals, which gives them confidence. The spending expansion, they say it'll pay off in the long run like it did when they went through their last big spending cycle on the retail side of the business with logistics. Advertising, another A, that was another big bright spot for Amazon, growing 24%. That was double the overall sales growth rate. Prime Video and those TV-style ads that they're starting to incorporate, big part of that. Jassy says it's early days, but so far, Brian, it's off to a good start.
But a lot of spending, too, I think was your point. In there, there was and because the stock really popped. And then my guess is, and I wasn't watching the stock and the call, I was, you know, like trying to prep for the show. When they started talking about a jack and spend, the stock did come down. It's still up, but it came down off its high.
Yeah, it took a little bit of the shine off of the quarter. It was sort of this reality check on the call that they said, yeah, it's going to be meaningful spending. But executives really tried to hammer that home and say, we've done this before. Trust us. You look at what happened with the North American business. They spent big during COVID. That area of the business was losing money for a long time. And look at it now. I mean, it's operating profits tripled. Yep. So they've been able to prove that in the past, and especially on the logistics, things like speed and delivery, bringing those costs down. They're saying AI is a massive opportunity. It's almost seen as a good thing by some analysts if they're spending because they're staying competitive. That's what executives were really trying to convince the Wall Street investors. And some of the questioning on the call was around that. How much is too much spending? And it really is a balance there.
Let's talk more about it. Kate Rooney, thank you very much. Bringing on our panel on this, EMG Capital founder and president Eric Jackson. He does not own Amazon stock right now. And Mountain CEO Mark Douglas. I mean, I guess I got to say this, Mark, and I'm not doing a commercial for Amazon, but I'm going to say this. I bought something on Amazon this morning about 9:30, 10 o'clock. By the time I left for work, it was on my doorstep. A couple of hours later, I had what I ordered. Whatever you think Amazon, what they're doing with technology and everything is mind-blowing.
I completely agree. I mean, it's almost unprecedented that they have three businesses that are all growing almost like their startups. So they have, you know, retail, they have AWS, and they have Amazon Advertising, which is part of Prime and obviously the retail site. And they are all market leaders. They are all growing, and they and that growth has no cap on it. I mean, it can just be indefinite. And retail is the is what you just said. It happens to me. I live in Miami. Almost every day, the same thing happens to me. I'm getting products like from the, I lift my hand from the keyboard. It's like it shows up at my door. It's unbelievable.
Well, they know, and I think they actually do know the power of the advertising. And Eric, that's kind of the point. It wasn't just AI. We talk about it. The boring old advertising business is also booming. And I've got to imagine, even though you don't own the stock, you're very happy to see their operating margin. Well, how about this? They have an operating margin because for 20 years, Amazon didn't make any money. They just made sales and no profit. Now they're actually starting to profit off all of this.
Yeah, that's why I think I find the conversation you were having with Kate, Brian, you know, kind of puzzling amongst those on Wall Street who were concerned about the spending. You know, these guys have been great stewards of capital. I mean, and for me, I was just blown away at the sheer scale of the profits that they're now operating at. I mean, every business, whether it's advertising or the retail business or AWS, these are massive businesses, and they did the cost cutting a year ago. And now you see the fruits of that in terms of, you know, record profits, you know, massive profits. I think Andy Jassy, you know, whether you own the stock in an ETF or whether you're Jeff Bezos, you sleep very well at night. He came out of the gates with a few tough quarters, but every quarter he tweaks, he makes it a little bit more profitable, and you see it in the results. Impressive.
Yeah.
I think Bezos, you know, Mark, probably sleeps pretty well at night for a lot of reasons, just, you know, from his yacht to his other yacht to the backup yacht to the plane to the other home. I mean, I would sleep well, too. That said, talk to us more, Mark, about the advertising side of this business. As I don't know if it's getting the, and here we are talking about NBA rights and stuff like this coming up later in the show. I don't think it gets enough attention that they might be the most powerful advertising company in the world.
Well, what Amazon's doing in advertising is they're taking, you know, a topic we've talked about a lot, which is performance advertising, the kind of advertising that Google and Meta are masters at. And they brought that to the homepage of Amazon when you search for a product. And now they're bringing it to Amazon Prime. And so they're better able to monetize the ads. They're able to bring TV ads to brands like the retail brands that previously didn't advertise on TV. And it in and of itself is creating, it's already in the tens of billions, create a huge business that is differentiated yes. from all the other advertisers. And it's going to gain significant scale and be very, very profitable.
Well, I'll end it with this, Eric. You know who doesn't love Amazon? The federal government. Because Lina Khan and the FTC are going after Amazon. Do you worry about the importance of all these businesses maybe being tied together at a time when the federal government is directly going after Amazon and wants to break it up?
I really don't. I see it as the FCC has to make a lot of noise to shout to the world, hey, we're doing something over here. We're going after this. We're Amazon, Apple, you know, all the rest. Whatever they were going after this week. So I just think, you know, take a step back. Watch the business. The business management is executing. The business keeps getting bigger and bigger, and more profitable. And, you know, the one thing I worry about is that, you know, Amazon and Microsoft are kind of flattish for the last few months. So a lot of the good news has been priced in. This hasn't run away on this amazing operating result. So I think that what was really positive was, you know, obviously they're spending a lot on AI. We know Meta's spending a lot of AI. You know, I think there's still a lot of upside for those players and who are providing the gear for AWS.
Well said, and it's probably why you don't own it. Eric Jackson, Mark Douglas, thank you both very much. Appreciate it. All right, coming up, despite a rough day, a rough month for stocks, don't worry, we've got some big winners. It's the Sully stats you got to see. Plus, Congress targeting deep fakes to protect actors and singers. Senator Marsha Blackburn is behind this bipartisan effort and joins us next. And welcome back to Last Call. Time now for some Sully stats. And we want to drop some good news on you because, well, with the markets today and, of course, all the focus on NVIDIA and AI and such, there are really some other hot stocks that you may not be paying attention to. I mean, that's our job. So we want to highlight three names that have been printing money for investors this year. And these are names that you may not know or pay attention to. So here you go. Vistra Energy, it's doubled this year. WK Kellogg, up nearly 80%, and Semtech, up 73%. Yes, Kellogg is that Kellogg, the cereal company. My guess is, by the way, the housing market in their headquarters town of Battle Creek, Michigan, is pretty hot right now. Semtech is a smaller semiconductor company. It gets almost no attention. It's got a $2.5 billion market cap, so it's small, and they've been around since 1960. Well, investors discovered them now. And Vistra, that is right in my wheelhouse. If you live in Texas, you know, Vistra is a Dallas-based power company. They say they're the largest competitive power generator in America. They also have over 1 gigawatt of battery storage. So look at that. Vistra, literally exactly a double just since January 1st. Semiconductors, cereal, and electricity. Sort of kind of defines the year, or the market year at least, so far, doesn't it? All right, meantime, while artificial intelligence has been all the rage in the markets, It's created a lot of excitement, but also anxiety for some actors and singers. You may remember this song from last year. It generated a lot of buzz because it was generated using AI deepfake technology to sound like the singers Drake and The Weeknd.
I came in with my ex like Selena, the flex, ay. Bumping Justin Bieber, but her favorite ain't left, ay. She know what she need, all her need, all she blessed, ay. Giving my best, ay.
Now remember, the voices you heard there, they were not Drake or The Weeknd. They were complete fakes. Now the issue is not only freaking out Hollywood and Nashville, but it's also getting more attention in Washington, D.C. The Senate Judiciary Committee holding a hearing this afternoon on the proposed No Fakes Act. The legislation would put measures in place protecting the voice and visual likeness of individuals from being recreated without their permission using AI. The bill being applauded by the Screen Actors Guild. So how will this legislation protect Americans from, let's call it, AI interference? Joining us now is Tennessee Senator and Senate Judiciary Committee member Marsha Blackburn. And Senator Blackburn, you can confirm you are real. This is not deep fake Blackburn, is it? I mean, send a signal.
No, not at all. You know, I am so happy to join you. And we did have a good hearing today. And I was able to bring some attention to those concerns that our singers and songwriters and actors in Tennessee have when it comes to AI and the ability of AI to rob them of their hard work and of their intellectual property. So the No Fakes Act actually focuses on preserving that intellectual property. We think that's the right positioning on it. And we are looking forward to getting this introduced. Yeah. Senator Coons, Senator Tillis, Senator Klobuchar, and I have worked on this for the last several months. And we feel as if we're shaping it up for an introduction next week.
And it sounds remarkably bipartisan, Senator.
Very much so. I think we all realize that AI is going to bring a lot of good to industries like healthcare, research, manufacturing, logistics. All of those are in Tennessee, and they're using AI capabilities every single day. There is concern, tremendous concern, yeah, around the creative community and the ability of AI to replicate their voices, their writings. And so we're seeking to put those protections in place, and we have to do it now before you have further development in AI. And yeah, when someone is spending a good bit of time working with generative AI and these systems, these large language models are training on their work, you have to be careful about what is open sourced, because it can end up replicating or replacing your writings and your image, your likeness, your voice.
Yeah, I mean, you're from Tennessee, so I'll say you can imagine somebody comes out with a fake Johnny Cash song. Somebody comes out with Elvis Presley, maybe a movie starring the new fake Elvis. Those estates are obviously do a lot of money from that, and this would help that. It's not just, though, Senator, about Hollywood, right, which we are concerned about. But we've also got this election coming up, which you may have heard about. And yes, there's a lot of real worries that we could see this having an impact. Deep fakes, fake voice. We kind of already saw that with a fake Biden voice call in the state of New Hampshire. Luckily, it didn't do too much damage. What can we do in the near term to make sure that deep fakes and AI, Senator, are not used in a nefarious way on this massively important election?
And that is a point of concern. You played the Drake and The Weeknd song. That had several million downloads before people realized it was a fake. And then as we go into the political season, it is going to be so important that things are verified, because you will have, whether it is the image or the voice of someone, and then you have a situation where they're being accused of saying or being in a place where they never have been. So it will be imperative that we we verify. Now, when we look at how music or entertainment moves through AI, then what we're going to have to do is watermark, find a way to watermark like we have with movies so that people are not downloading, replicating, and utilizing those. I think also, as we look at AI guardrails, focusing more on in use for how you are going to use content and paying attention there and legislating not so much to a technology.
Well, we'll look forward to the vote. We love the fact that it's bipartisan as well. It affects Hollywood, it affects Nashville and everywhere in between. Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, thank you for coming on.
You got it. Take care.
Take care. All right, speaking of AI and deep fakes, next Tuesday at the Milken Global Conference, we're going to be sitting down here live on Last Call with musician, producer, all-around entertainer Will.i.am to talk about AI, what the musical side is doing to make sure the stuff that we just showed you does not happen. That's 1 week from today out in Los Angeles. Big interview. By the way, lot of big guests lined up for that. All right, coming up, because we're not done here. NBC reportedly preparing a multi-billion dollar shot for the future rights to the NBA. The details and who could sweep the series. Next. All right, welcome back. Let's talk sports and live TV. Warner Brothers Discovery, which owns CNN, HBO, TNT, and more, tanked again today, reportedly on our parent company NBC Universal being ready to go after the NBA's TV rights. If so, and if we get it, it would be a massive blow to the already struggling Warner Brothers Discovery. Think no Charles Barkley, no Shaq, no TNT. Well, investors dunked on WBD shares today. The stock now has wiped out 15 years of gains. So how does this all play out and impact TV and sports generally? Joining us now, CNBC.com media reporter Alex Sherman and the Bear Traps Report founder and author of When Markets Speak, and of course, a new book out as well, Larry McDonald. Thank you both very much. Alex, first to you. I'm an NBC Universal employee. I don't know anything. It's well above my pay grade. Is NBC Universal going to get the NBA?
It's possible, Brian. I mean, I think the NBA knows NBC. They had a pre-existing relationship from 1990 to 2002. I just reported a story today that John Tesh's famous song, Round Ball Rock, which the NBA used for its theme song, is potentially up for renewal if NBC does, in fact, get the NBA. But look, you know, there's a big balance sheet in Comcast. They've already bid $2.5 billion on average. That is a lot of money. It may be more money than what Warner Brothers Discovery wants to pay. And what my sources say is that Disney's probably going to get a package. Amazon's probably going to get a package. And the last package is either going to go to NBC Universal or Warner Brothers Discovery. The question is, can Warner Brothers Discovery truly live without the NBA? Because the NBA not only brings in advertising for that company, but it also helps with carriage revenue for all of Warner Brothers Discovery's networks, not even just TNT and TBS, which carry the NBA, but all of the networks, Discovery, HGTV, Food Network, all of these channels are negotiated and bundled together. So that's what the value of the NBA means for that company.
I'd hate to see anything happen to the Food Network. I made my TV debut on a 1996 game show called Ready, Set, Cook. That is random, but interesting and true. And I won, by the way, with Dom DeLuise. Larry McDonald, would you touch Warner Brothers Discovery stock with Shaquille O'Neal's money?
Well, one of the things, Brian, we talk about in our book, When Markets Speak, is you have to look at the entire capital structure. So right now there's about $18 billion of equity in the capital structure of Warner Brothers and about $47 billion of debt. So think of a pie, $18 billion of equity, $47 billion of debt. So when that happens, you need to watch, you know, credit leads equity. You need to watch the credit. You need to watch the bonds. The bonds have stabilized. The bonds are telling me that the credit is stabilizing. The equity is not. But it's telling me near term here, there's a potential buying opportunity for the equity. Also, there's going to be probably a bidding war at some point for the asset. So in other words, there's a very high short interest on the equity. The short interest is up 30% the last several months. That's another potentially bullish sign. So there's a lot of things. You could have a buyer come in. Comcast can make a bid for Warner Brothers. Apple could make a bid. You've got all these tech companies coming in and bidding for these assets. So, yeah, I think we're close. We're close on the equity.
But that, so the high short interest, Larry, you can either use that, you know, you're betting it to go down or you're hedging another position. I mean, if you're a smart short seller, but you also know there's this chance the company could get bought as a whole, why short it?
Well, that's exactly my point, Brian. When the short interest gets this high and it's accelerated, the shorts have to be very careful here, very careful. And so I think you had a decent amount of short covering today. And that's the thing. They're really short because for all these reasons that you mentioned in the program, in other words, just think about this transaction, right? Like their run rate on this deal, the TNT deal, is like 1.1, 1.2 billion. And now a competitor comes in, Comcast, with a $2.5 billion deal. So in other words, they just don't have the balance sheet necessary for this market. And that's why they need a bigger partner.
Yeah, amazing stuff that's happening in media. We got to let you both go. Larry McDonald, the new book is Win Markets Speak. Look forward to it. I know you got a party coming up here soon. Alex Sherman, great reporting, breaking news as always, guys. Thank you very much. All right, let's get now to our quicker than the ticker, all the best of the rest of the headlines. Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Office loan defaults are nearing historic levels. More than 38 billion of U.S. office buildings are threatened by defaults, foreclosures, or other forms of distress. That is the highest amount since 2012, according to data firm MSCI. Walmart debuting a new private label grocery brand. It's called Better Goods and will focus on affordability and food trends. The sharpest images yet of the iconic Horsehead Nebula. NASA's Webb telescope captured detailed images of the nebula located next to the Orion's belt. It is 1,300 light years away, and it is super cool. The winner of the record-breaking $1.3 billion Powerball jackpot revealed he's in Oregon. It was sold to Cheng Charlie Safin, who said he and his wife would split the prize with a friend. Safin's also been fighting cancer for 8 years and says that he will now be able to afford to find a good doctor. We wish him well. Panera's new bread head hat sold out just hours after debuting. What? Coming up, eat, drink, play, watch, and soon, bet. Arcade giant Dave & Buster's getting into social gambling. The story next. Here's a bonkers story. Apparently, arcade restaurant chain Dave & Buster's is ready to get into gambling. Not gambling on sports, but gambling on games. Like skee-ball or the Hot Shots basketball game. Arcades, booze, and real money. What could go wrong? Let's bring in somebody who knows a lot about all three of those things, and that is our friend, Contessa Brewer. So we'll go to Dave and Buster's.
I mean, the world knows that I know.
I'll be on the app, and I'll be like, Contessa's not going to get 225 on skee ball.
We would have to be there together playing skee ball, which I will say for the record has never happened.
And
but that doesn't mean it couldn't. It doesn't mean it couldn't happen. So this is just a way for Dave & Buster's to really amp up the engagement of its customer base with its games and maybe long view, keep people in the facility longer if they actually are having some competition. If you put some money on the line, chances are you're more engaged with the game that you're playing. Now, this comes to us through their tech platform, Lucra, which is known for its gamification software. So they're already offering friendly wagers, say, on the tennis match that you're playing, and you can go to the app and use the Lucra technology to wager against your friend rather than pulling out $5 out of your pocket because, you know, who carries
but
cash
this could,
anymore?
Contessa, this could ramp up. Let's say we did go to Dave & Buster's, right? Maybe, you know, I'm overserved a little bit. And I'm like, I'll bet $10,000. Like, are there protections that this
not
could...
Not possible.
No? There's interesting...
They're not going to let you bet $10,000. It's going to be a very small amount. Like, you know, right now, maybe $5 or $10. The details aren't clear, and Dave & Buster's has not put out its own release about what this app is going to do and the potential. Here, Luker is the one who's telling us this is the way the platform works in our other offerings, and here's how we think it could work for Dave and Buster's. But it's meant to be a friendly wager. And that being said, I've already seen, I mean, this story has gone gonzo. It's not for kids. It's for 18 and older.
Well, we're definitely going to have a skee ball off now. It's on like a BB gun. Contessa Brewer, thank you. Thank you all for watching. See you tomorrow.
Swing into summer and save when you go pro. Invest with an advantage. Be prepared for any market with CNBC Pro's exclusive stock screener, Investor Playbook, and Stock Picks. With CNBC Pro, you'll have the strategy and tools you need to reach your goals. Get Pro's unrivaled access and essential tools with a special offer for a limited time. Go to cnbc.com/prosale now.